Hello, Kieran here. This episode was recorded before the news of Kenny Omega's diverticulitis and hospitalisation came out, which is why we don't talk about that or World's End. We, of course, wish Kenny the best of health and a full recovery. On with the show. Hello and welcome to another episode of Must See Matches. I am Kieran LeFord, and joining me as always, the man behind Must See Matches, Mark Buckledy. Mark, how are you?
I'm a lot better now than I was when I woke up this morning. I'm good.
Excellent. Full of paracetamol, full of Lemsip.
Yep.
Sitting on a hot water bottle. All the fine stuff. Today, we are talking about our final match from this decade, in fact. And it was one of the first must-see matches of this decade. We are talking about Kenny Omega and Hangman Adam Page versus the Young Bucks from AEW Revolution, February 29th, 2020, Wintrust Arena in Chicago. The show Cody Rhodes famously debuted that neck tattoo. And joining us today, someone we are very excited to have on, someone Mark and I are both very big fans of. He has written and drawn Wonder Woman and Beta Ray Bill for DC and Marvel respectively, made humans and aliens do a powerbomb, and is effectively currently the boss of the Transformers. But most importantly, he's a very big wrestling fan. Daniel Warren Johnson has joined us. Dan, how are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me. Thanks for staying up late for me.
It's not a big too
time difference. It's like, okay. All right.
It's only like 9. It's fine. We don't go to bed that early.
Okay, cool.
So I know you wrote about it in the intro to Do a Powerbomb, and I saw the show you did with Comic Tropes like a year or so ago.
Sure.
But for our audience, do you mind like telling us how you became a wrestling fan?
Oh, yeah. I mean, hopefully... hopefully I'm not laughed out of the room, but yes, here I go. I was on the outskirts of wrestling growing up. I was very sheltered as a kid. My parents were very concerned with what I was putting into my mind with my eyes. So no Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, no Batman, the animated series. Power Rangers was a stretch. And wrestling definitely fell under the No Way Jose category. So I missed all of it. And that was like mid to late 90s is when that heyday, that like golden days of The Rock and Mankind and all that amazing stuff. I missed all of it. And when I was older, after I had my first child, Fiona, who was born in 2018, she was not a great sleeper. And, you know, I really had to like, we had to coax her to go to sleep and walking her around. And I just remember like sleepless nights and like, you get bored. You're just holding a baby all the time. And my friends in comics were very much into New Japan Pro Wrestling at the time. And one of my buddies, Ramon Villalobos, was drawing Tetsuya Naito as a commission at a con. This is early in... this is maybe late 2017, early 2018. I can't quite remember exactly, but I was like, who's this guy? He looks really cool. And they're like, this is Tetsuya Naito. You don't know who that is? I was like, what's that? What's a New Japan, you know? And they told me about it. And I just was intrigued because I just liked the look of Naito so much. I was like, his hair is crazy. He wears a baseball cap all the time. And it just got me intrigued. So I was like, well, I'm just, you know, wandering the house, patting my kids back, so I'll put on wrestling just in the background, just see if I like it. And that was like right around the beginning of the 2018 G1 Climax. So that was G1 Climax 28. That was with the great Golden Lovers match.
So that's kind of commonly accepted as like the last of the great G1s.
I think you could say that. Yes, 29 was pretty great too. That was 2019.
And then it all got a bit pandemic-y and no fancy.
Yeah, and I think 29 was not nearly as good as 28 too, which I'm being honest. But 28 was also Tomohiro Ishii and Kota Ibushi, where I think it was the last time Kota Ibushi jumped off a balcony.
It probably would be. Yeah.
And it's probably smart if that is the last time he jumps off a balcony.
Right. He did a moonsault on the Ishii, yeah. And I was like, I'd never seen anything like that before, ever. Like, and I was, of course, new to pro wrestling. So after that match, I was in full. I mean, I'd stuck my big toe in the water with the G1. And the more I watched it, the more I was getting into it. And then I watched that match and I became a fan for life. So, and then, you know, I was like, what does America have to offer? And I turn on current or like 2018 WWE Raw.
Ooh.
And I'm like, this is not anything that I want to be putting into my mind or body, you know.
So given that you're relatively new to wrestling, how much have you gone back and watched? So, for example, I read the Kenta Kobashi reference on the letters page of Transformers issue 2.
Yeah.
But how much awareness do you have of the stuff that Mark and I, for example, take for granted? Like people like Steve Austin, The Rock, Hulk Hogan, Bret Hart, Jushin Liger.
So I went back kind of organically, I'd like to think, because I did not get into WWE at all. But sure. When AEW started, I followed a bunch of people from New Japan over to AEW, and I was kind of expecting New Japan in America, which I obviously did not get. It was more of an American wrestling show, which I was not used to. So more promos and more tomfoolery in and out of the ring, which is like, you know, it is what it is. It's fine.
Yeah.
But I got an appreciation for American style of wrestling, and then they were referencing things that were happening in the past that I would go back and visit through kind of AEW. And I would be, you know, I'd listen to the Wrestling Observer and they'd tell me like, oh, this is like WCW whenever. And, and I'd go back and check it out. And I definitely did. I was really into Liger. It was 2019 was kind of his like end of tour when he, like last of the Kishin Liger came out. And, Minoru Suzuki bowed after their final match. Do you remember that? It was a huge deal.
I went to the Tokyo Dome in 2020 specifically to see the Liger retirement matches.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. I had my buddy get me a t-shirt from that, from 2020 Tokyo Dome, but I was not there. And I did a little mini fan comic of Jushin Thunder Liger to kind of experiment to see if I wanted to do wrestling comics.
Yeah, so, I mean, I asked you that question, but almost immediately after writing it, I found your WrestleTober stuff, and I found like the little like Thank You Liger comic and that kind of thing. I was like, oh, he's actually seen pretty much everybody.
I actually had a friend in America post me the WrestleTober, Inktober one that you did.
Awesome.
Basically, because I didn't know if you could actually send it international. So it was like, well, ask my friend. It's like, can I use your address and can you post it?
I'm going to use this middleman.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So who would you say has made the biggest impression on you, both currently active and let's call it historically?
Some of the people that are really directly responsible for me really falling in love with wrestling, definitely Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi and Tomohiro Ishii and Liger. Historically, though, you know, I don't know. That's a tough question because with the history of it, I'm kind of like treating it a little bit like a historian. Like it's hard for me to get emotionally invested in characters and storylines that happened so long ago now.
Yeah.
But I
feel the same
say,
if I ever watch like a prequel movie. So like I know the hero's in no danger because he's just survived the movie I watched 5 years ago that was set after this.
Yeah. I think if I had to choose one, it would probably be Liger, just because he's definitely the wrestler that I did the deepest dive on, especially as he was beginning to retire. I watched all of his major matches, my favorite one being the one against the great Muda, because it's the one where he's Muda like pulls apart his mask.
Yes.
And there's blood everywhere. And he finally beats him. I believe it's with a Shooting Star Press. And then they hand him the junior belt and he just throws it on the ground because he's so frustrated. I couldn't tell if it was in storyline, if it was a shoot where he takes that title and he's just like, he was frustrated with the match or he was frustrated with something and he just throws it down on the ground, you know, like, and I just thought that was so badass. I also like he's the one who came up with the Shooting Star Press, right?
He was indeed. Yep. And we covered on this show Masakatsu Funaki was the man who took the first Shooting Star Press in front of the public.
Really?
Yeah, we did a Funaki match a long, long time ago.
Do you remember, since you're a Liger person, you'll probably know this better than me, but when he would not do that all the time. That was a special thing.
I mean, yeah, it was very special. At the time, like, he was the only person doing it. And then I think as time went on, like, other people were able to do it better than him. Like, Super J-Cup, he comes up against Hayabusa, who can do that like it's drinking water.
Yes.
You know, and he's getting older, and his knees are going. 93, he breaks his ankle.
Okay.
So I imagine that would put a damper on doing that. And then later on, I think he breaks his other leg later on, and then he has cancer.
Yeah, I remember he had a tumor.
Brain tumor, isn't it? Yeah.
When he would do it, though, it was always a game. It was the end of the match, right?
Yeah.
Like, that was this match is over.
Yeah, we had this discussion kind of on the show a little while ago about the art of the finisher, and it's, you know, why was Jake Roberts' DDT a finisher, but somebody else's isn't? And that was because, like, he is the guy who knows, quote unquote, the secret to doing it the most effective way. And my personal view on finishers is either you know how to do a move better than anybody else, or you do something that's unique to you and nobody knows how to kick out of.
Sure.
Which is what makes sense to me. On the subject of finishers, my final question, and I don't want to give too much away about it.
Sure.
Does Kenny Omega know you stole his finisher and who you gave it to?
As far as I know, I don't think Kenny Omega is a comic book fan.
And he prefers his animated, really, doesn't he, I suppose?
I think so. I know for sure the Young Bucks don't really care about comics.
Yeah.
The person that I really only know over in AEW really is Christopher Daniels.
Yeah.
Definitely a comic book fan.
Huge comic book fan. So
I've met and dealt with him both inside and outside of wrestling. And in fact, one time was interviewing him about his comic. So yes, he is definitely a comic book guy.
Yeah. Whereas I'm pretty sure the Bucks and Kenny are like, whatever, it's comics. And I can't honestly say, but I'd love to show him someday.
I'm sure you'll get to. Alrighty, let's get this moving. This is our second match from Revolution 2020 after we covered Pac versus Orange Cassidy way back on episode 18.
Great match.
Actually, given that you are a big wrestling fan who lives in Chicago, were you at this show?
I was at this show.
Excellent. We get live perspective as well.
Yes, and I had great seats.
Mark, we are, as we are now covering our second match on this show, did any others get nominated and miss the cutoff for discussion? I think I've just blindsided him with a question. I can always tell when he's not what he's prepared for and what he's not.
Yeah, that is definitely, give me a quick second. I will say, while I'm checking, these were the only two that were nominated from that show.
Okay.
We had 24 matches in total nominated from AEW. Now, one of the things, we haven't mentioned this a lot, but the cutoff for the list that we used to generate the podcast was March 2022. So there's a lot of...
Yes, March 31st, 2022, wasn't it?
So there's a lot of, like, some of the bigger modern AEW matches that weren't part of that cutoff.
This would be the show to do it. However, I don't want to get into it because I think we would end up taking hours. I often end up thinking what AEW matches since the cutoff have happened that would have been nominated. That could spark a discussion that we probably don't have time for.
Yeah. So what I will say is Adam Page had three other matches nominated, and they are all really good. It's two of his Danielson matches and the title win at Full Gear 2021 against Kenny Omega.
Mm-hmm.
Surprisingly, this is the only podcast that we are going to be covering the Young Bucks.
Interesting.
Matt had 18 nominations and Nick had 19 because he had a pretty well-loved four-way match in Chikara with Nick Jackson, El Generico, now known as Sami Zayn, Kota Ibushi and Jigsaw, and that's a cracker of an undercard.
Is a match that I rewatched after submitting all my nominations, and I was like, I probably should have put that on as well. That's a fabulous match.
The second highest nominated Young Bucks match, I think, was from PWG, actually. It was a three-way ladder match with the Young Bucks versus the Super Smash Brothers versus Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly.
Mm.
And that is one hell of a thing. They also had the Young Bucks and Golden Lovers match from 2018. That got a good few nominations.
I think that gets referenced on commentary here, I think.
Yeah.
Excalibur talks about it, yeah.
I was talking with a couple of people that we've had as previous guests and talking about, okay, what Young Bucks match would you, if you had to pick one, which ones would you do? And I think this is one of those. The three-way ladder match is one of those, and that Golden Lovers match, I think, are all really good.
Yeah, I'm surprised. The Lucha Brothers cage match came before the cutoff, didn't it? Because that's the year after this.
That got at least one nomination, so yeah, that did get nominated.
Yeah, that would be the other one.
I was there live for that one too.
Yeah, that one's a bit overcooked for me. Like, that's one that's they start doing some like wild, silly stuff in it that kind of like took me out of it, I think. But okay. Like, I remember like being very excited for it on the night, like watching it on pay-per-view.
The funniest nomination for the Young Bucks for me is they had a match with Kenny Omega against British Strong Style at Fight Club Pro in the
UK. And
that
got nominated.
Not only did that not get nominated, I was at that show and I did not see that match. Because the building was overpacked. The guy stood next to me fainted due to heat stroke. And by the time, like, before the match, before the main event had started, there was no way that I could see the ring or the screen that they had up with the match footage. So it's excellent. A case of, I'm sat here, it's nearly midnight, I can't see anything, it's hot. I need to drive for 90 minutes. I'm just going to go.
He just went home. Brilliant.
I just
fantastic.
Went home.
Fantastic. All right. So this match is all part of the long-running Hangman self-doubt storyline, which in terms of long-term booking might be still be the best thing AEW have ever done.
Yeah.
I managed to pack in the 4 weeks of TV leading up to this match, as I tend to do for the big pay-per-view matches. Other stuff going on in AEW at this time. Cody is going through MJF's trials. A very Metal Gear Solid looking one-eyed John Moxley has defied champion Chris Jericho's attempts to bring him onside in the lead up to his title shot.
Yep.
We're wondering who the Exalted One will be while the company is trying to tell us it's going to be Christopher Daniels. Britt Baker is curb stomping people's teeth out, and the ranking system still exists. So February the 5th, I'm not going to run through the whole TV show. I'll just talk about the stuff involving our participants and a couple of other things that caught my eye and ear as I went through. Jim Ross is very confused by the TV debut of Yuka Sakazaki, someone I enjoy very much. And twice within 2 weeks, he has to ask Excalibur what exactly a magical girl is and seems very dissatisfied with the answer both times. He then goes on to imply that Tony Schiavone is horny for Chris Statlander. but involving our participants here, Young Bucks, Kenny Omega and Hangman versus the Lucha Brothers, Butcher and Blade. The amount of pyro for the Lucha Brothers is frankly obscene. Like, I think Cody got jealous, and this is like he showed this tape to Vince when he got to WWE and he went, I want this every Monday. Hangman comes out by himself while Kenny is with the Bucks, and he kind of feels left out of the tag chemistry between the other three as they run all over doing their elite triple team things. And he's just sort of like watching like a sad Charlie Brown from the corner. The crowd, though, goes nuts for him running wild off a hot tag. And then later he refuses to tag either of the Bucks despite having hurt his knee and gets pinned by Pentagon. And then afterwards, he'd rather have beers with the crowd than hang out with the rest of his team. Some of the action in this is very, very good. Omega, this is the show. We partly covered some of this stuff because of the Pac and Orange Cassidy match. While Kenny is dealing with Riho having been beaten up by Nyla Rose in an interview with Pac, Hangman and the Bucks argue backstage. Matt takes Paige's beer off him, saying that this is the problem. And after they leave, he produces a comically enormous pitcher of beer from under the camera and carries on drinking.
I remember that.
Yeah. This is also the show that has the Cody MJF 10 lashes segment that I rewatched. And oh, that is still brilliant, compelling stuff.
That's great stuff.
The best parts are Wardlow being given the ninth shot and Max getting so mad that Cody took all of them and didn't quit as he was hoping he would, just kicking him in the balls and running off into the crowd. February 12th, Hangman and Kenny have a rematch against SCU, the team they won the belts off just 3 weeks ago. Everyone is a babyface, but Paige won't shake hands, as you'd expect. Very good. These are four guys who know exactly what to do and when to do it. Kenny and Paige obviously defend successfully, and Hangman again goes off to have beers with the crowd. Best thing on this show, though, Nyla versus Riho. They tear the fucking house down and have the great spot where Riho runs along the apron and then along a table that Nyla is setting up to give her a dropkick on the floor. Nyla wins, comes backstage with the belt and stuffs it in Kenny's face and pops him with, "All your base are belong to me, Kenny." February 19th in Atlanta, excellent show. One of the best Dynamites there has ever been still. Probably should have been the go-home for the pay-per-view. We get a tag team battle royal, back when AEW battle royals were good, fun, and not a dreaded booking crutch. I had totally forgotten that Shima and T-Hawk were ever in the company.
Oh, yeah.
Raven takes a payday just to sit in a chair near a Dark Order SCU brawl and never be acknowledged. And then Matt Jackson wins this for the Bucks to get the pay-per-view title shot, despite them already being number one contenders, according to the rankings. Also features non-participant Sammy Guevara wrecking his ankle by taking a phenomenal bump springboarding into a super kick just before the finish for no apparent reason. Moxley beats Jericho's hired assassin, Jeff Cobb. And then we get Omega and Paige versus the Lucha Brothers in a match that honestly is almost as good as the pay-per-view match. It's one of the best matches on. It's crazy stuff. Penta and Phoenix get this shot by being the last team to have beaten Hangman and Kenny in December before they became the champions. And then Penta pinning Paige in that eight man. Champs have individual entrances again. They're really emphasizing that these are two individuals and not a cohesive tag team. Phoenix is on fire in this match. Everything he does looks great. The champions win when Paige blind tags himself in. Phoenix misses the spinning hook kick on Kenny and gets sandwiched between the Buckshot V-trigger combo. Bucks come out. They help Kenny up. Paige tries to pull him away from them, but he shrugs them all off. And Hangman again gets a beer, goes off through the crowd to be alone with his thoughts. For a TV match, 4.75 stars in The Observer and currently 8.98 on Cage Match.
Wow.
Main event is that Cody versus Wardlow cage match with the crazy moonsault off the top as well. Hell of a 2 hour. Yeah.
Jesus, they pack that in.
Yeah. February 26th is the go home show. And it opens with...
Did they actually forget what week the pay-per-view was?
Well, I don't know. It might just have been like, oh shit, we can only do these things then. It feels like both the 19th and the 26th, like, should have been like 1 4-hour go-home show. Feb 26th opens with the Kenny Omega versus Pac 30-minute Iron Man match. Another 4 3/4 star match in The Observer. Currently 9.23 on Cage Match. Kenny has the Bucks in his corner. Hangman is nowhere to be seen. I think we briefly talked about this on the Pac and Orange Cassidy show. It's a hell of a match. Yep. It has AEW's first ever disqualification where Pac gets himself intentionally DQ'd to hit Kenny with a chair.
He's got a shooting star press off the top turnbuckle onto a table outside.
Yes, and one half of the table just shoots up and smashes Pac in the side of the face as he comes down.
Yep, oh my God.
Yeah, they go to a draw with Omega spending the last 3 minutes trapped in the Brutalizer but refusing to tap out.
A playoff of All Out's finish from the previous year.
Yeah, Pac decks the ref, and Excalibur yells, "It's not Turner's fault, it's Time's fault." they then do a very quick sudden death overtime where Kenny knees the hell out of Pac and hits the one-winged angel for the pin. It's a great, great match. And if you want to know where Pac goes from here, listen to episode 18. And finally for us, we have a sit down with both teams. This is a really good, a Shades of Grey character piece. And it feels, for the most part, like real people talking to each other.
Yeah.
Mm. the good bit isn't the Bucks pointing out Paige's drinking problem or saying he used to be a jobber in Ring of Honor before they pulled him into the Bullet Club. It's Kenny saying he's amazed how quickly he and Hangman stumbled upon tag team chemistry and won the title. And Paige takes offense going, oh, you think this was all just a big accident?
Yeah.
I really love like this phase of Hangman Paige. Like everybody has self-doubt, right? He's so... You know, he's the cool, handsome, amazing wrestler. He's a cowboy who wears horrible clothes, but he's so relatable in just a human kind of way. Like everybody knows someone who has one too many beers and can say the wrong thing. Everybody has self-doubt. Yeah, he's just wonderful throughout all of this.
There is a reason that the crowd connects so strongly to him, both at that point and throughout much of the next 2 years. It's a little sad that maybe they didn't book his title run as well as they could have. I think he's actually the person that AEW have created the best.
The often used line about The Undertaker was that he is the conscience of the World Wrestling Federation. And I think Hangman Adam Page is the conscience of all Elite Wrestling.
Yeah.
Let's actually get to this match. I'm a video editor. I'm not sure this is a good recap video. It imparts all the information, but it's not helped by a song I thought was really bad. And there's nothing kind of like spicy or interesting about the cut. The videos would get better. When Kenny and Hangman break up, they do the Spinderella, you don't know what you've got till it's gone video, which was really fun. And then when they finally get out of Daly's Place and they've got crowds back, they have a Daly's Place tribute video, which is really, really good, showing all of the highlights from the no crowd era. I'd forgotten that this was the synchronized flashing wristband pay-per-view. And I was like, why haven't they done that again?
That was awesome. I remember everybody was really confused until the lights went down, and it was super cool.
Yeah.
So basically, were you given that when you handed your ticket over?
I don't remember when I got it, but I'm pretty sure it's like you went through security and they were handing them out there. Because I had a digital ticket, so they beeped you before through security.
Yeah.
And you go through security and then there was a person handing them out after.
Okay.
It's such a cool effect. It just adds something different like to the wide shots and stuff.
Yeah.
And I've not seen anybody else really do it.
It's super cool.
Yeah. Paige's name graphic usually has something funny written on it, but here I noticed it was blank.
Yep.
He and Kenny have separate entrances again. Kenny looks like a huge star on his entrance with like the way his video is, the pyro, the pop. The video isn't the one with the shot of him walking sadly through Shibuya Crossing. It's just like fancy graphics and whatnot. He's not called the cleaner. There's no North Carolina bullshit. Like, this is the best kind of Kenny. And he's on an in-ring roll at this point, I think. The Bucks get booed on their intro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Paige and Matt are already antagonizing each other before the bell. And I wrote, Excalibur starts the match by plugging more books than Mark's Twitter. as Omega and Nick Jackson start out, they do some like athletic stuff, feeling each other out. But Kenny is ready for a super kick and backs off. And they kind of high five in a friendly, sportsmanlike way and both of them tag out.
Yep.
And then, as you kind of alluded to, Mark, the crowd are ready for Hangman. There is a huge cowboy shit chant when he tags in. Hangman and Matt's feeling out period is different. It's more grappling on the mat, and it's aggressive grappling on the mat as well. And they come up about even. Jackson offers a hand, and after some consideration, Paige just spits in his face. Leading to, again on this podcast, Jim Ross talking about someone leaving their DNA on their opponent.
That's not how DNA works. I do not approve
of this turn of phrase. Yes. I think he learned what DNA was in 2020 and has just kept dropping it into commentary ever since, whether it's appropriate or not.
I mean, I learned DNA from a G.I. Joe cartoon when I was less than 10 and I knew what DNA is more than Jim Ross.
Not Matt Morgan in TNA, the DNA of TNA. That's the only time Matt Morgan's ever going to get mentioned on this show. Matt Jackson, the other Matt, double legs the cowboy, starts throwing fists, pushing both the ref and Omega aside when they try to intervene. Nick manages to pull him off. He talks some sense into him and persuades him to tag out. And then Hangman greets him with a slap. So Nick fires back with a kick, turns to Matt, and he's just like, fuck it, you can have him, and tags him back in again.
What I really like with this is because, so this year we had the Adam Cole versus MJF friends that don't want to hurt each other match, where it kind of got a little bit silly because it's like, yes, we don't want to do what we would normally do in a match. Whereas here, all of the tension and all of the drama for me comes, the core of it is Matt Jackson doing things that are uncharacteristic of Matt Jackson.
Uncharacteristic of the babyface version of Matt Jackson, which he has been largely up until this point.
Yeah. But even then, it's like, even when he's a heel, he is not taking someone to the mat and punching them in the head repeatedly.
No, that I guess
is,
not.
That is not what it is. It's all the core of the drama of this match is Matt Jackson loses his cool and it escalates from there.
I really liked the kind of hesitancy of Kenny, kind of contrasted with the let's friggin' get him of Hangman.
Yeah.
That was really cool. And yes, in the room, the Bucks were getting booed the heck out of the building. I mean, it was all about Kenny. Like, people were so mad at them, and they were playing it up big time. And Nick, and I think traditionally so too, he's always been more of the one that has been more likely to be the heel in the two, you know, characters. And Nick eventually, yeah, following suit and losing his cool, which took a while to happen. And the crowd was ready, man. I mean, we were warmed up, and yeah, good times. I thought that opening like grappling with Kenny was really great, and we knew that they had some stuff in their back pocket that they were just waiting to pull out. You know, they didn't want to get too dirty too soon.
Yeah, there's a lot of pockets in this match.
Yeah.
So the Bucks run a whole load of their double teams on both champs, with Paige taking the brunt of it. He comes back by targeting Matt's long storied back, which dates back many years into New Japan Pro Wrestling, and then attacking Kenny by just slapping him on the chest. He is soon legal again, though, throws both Bucks out to the floor, where Kenny stops him powerbombing Matt through the timekeeper's table. Back inside, they pound Matt's back some more until Matt, kind of adrenaline rush, Northern Light suplexes the pair of them, manages to tag out.
Yeah.
There are many things that I dislike about the Massey brothers, but a Nick Jackson hot tag is not one of them. He flings high kicks everywhere. He flips off Paige before giving him a lariat while simultaneously bulldogging Kenny. He's just running wild over both of them until Kenny saves Hangman from the sharpshooter with the Katara Crusher. Matt gets booed for preventing the Terminator dive, then takes a Hurricanrana.
Watching that replay, I was like, he's going for it. Because I forgot he got intercepted. The cut is perfect on the replay.
Yeah, so Kenny initially is down doing the mat pounding, and Matt comes in and kicks him in the head to stop him doing it, but gets Hurricanrana out onto the apron. And then he's out of camera shot, and as Kenny is going over the top rope, Matt runs the apron and super kicks him.
Yep.
So he gets booed twice for intercepting the same dive.
Yeah.
Bucks take over on Kenny, just knocking Paige off the corner so he's not there to tag. And when he gets back up, Matt returns the spit from earlier. Kenny takes a lovely jumping pile driver from Matt for a near fall. Nick locks in a front chancery to keep him down. And when it looks like Omega is going to break out of it to tag, Nick releases, goes to swipe Paige off the apron again. But Hangman sees it coming and clocks him instead, sending him back into Kenny to do a D'Lo Brown tribute sky high. Bucks pinball all over the place for Paige's hot tag. And even though they prevent the buckshot, he slingshots both of them to the floor and crushes them with his lovely Orihara moonsault, which firstly looks awesome from the crane camera. And secondly, and in 2023, this seems impossible. They don't switch cameras in the middle of it. It's all in one beautiful shot.
Agreed.
Loved it.
And I loved Paige's hot tag because he doesn't do things like, he's not a guy that has a ton of moves. He's not a guy, but he knows what he does incredibly well. And his sense of timing and getting it together, it this is just a really good sequence that flows well, looks good, and doesn't feel illogical either. So I just really appreciate that.
I also really liked the bounce that Kenny got on that pile driver.
Yes. He's been studying his old Rob Van Dam tapes.
I don't know how he did that.
It's crazy. I don't know how.
He's just got a spring in his neck. But hey, maybe Kota Ibushi is teaching him like how to, you know, bump off your neck as much as possible. Ever the professional, Hangman lariats Nick out of his boots exactly as they come back from the live replays of the moonsault.
Yep.
And then throws him into Buck Corner to get Matt to tag in. He obliges, and the crowd, I mean, they voice it, really want to see the cowboy fuck him up.
Yeah.
They shit talk each other and do the yay boo punches. Matt comes out on top with a double throat thrush, but runs into a big boot. Kenny blind tags in, and in a moment that still scares the balls off me every time I watch it, they go for their pop-up German suplex. In the TV run-up, I saw them hit this perfectly at least three times. This time, though, Matt has jumped too high so Paige can't get hold of him round the waist, and Paige gets his hands on the back of Jackson's thighs and pushes him over. Thankfully, this is the small, agile, bouncy Matt Jackson, and he manages to get his arms up, taking the landing on his forearms rather than his head, but for a split second, the crowd, the commentators, and the referee all think he's done for. I watched it back in slow motion, and actually, I think if Hangman hadn't have pushed him, he'd have taken it on directly on the back of his neck.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
a gnarly spot.
It's so scary. Matt has to kind of slump out of Kenny's pin after a doctor bomb and manages to tag out. Nick runs wild again. When he goes for his third, like, knuckle lock rope walk of the match, Paige shoves him off onto the top rope, but he backflips, lands on his feet on the ramp, and comes back in with a slingshot destroyer. Hangman winds up in Buck's corner, clobbers Nick with an elbow as he charges in and goes to climb up moonsault style, but Matt cuts him off and traps his head for Nick to deliver the Will Ospreay cheeky Nando's kick, and they follow up with the Motor City Machine Guns powerbomb Shiranui combo.
So was that the cheeky Popeyes or the cheeky Cracker Barrel?
When Will was with Bea Priestley, I saw a small show that she did it on, and the crowd all chanted Chicken Cottage at her, which for the uninitiated and the non-British is a very cheap chain of chicken takeaway establishments in this country.
What is a Nando? I don't actually know.
Nando's is in this country, it started in Portugal, but here it's a very popular like chicken takeaway restaurant.
Okay.
Yeah, I personally don't like and don't eat chicken, but it went through a period of being unbelievably popular, and that's where you go to get your chicken and fries.
Okay.
And it has a particular type of spice, I think, that people like a lot.
Okay.
So there we go. Yeah.
Learn something new every day.
Yeah. Mark's right. Think of it like a Popeyes, I guess. Although we now have that here. They've invaded too.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Kenny makes a save for all this and gets thrown to the floor. Paige does some fancy superkick evasion, and in the part that has aged like Tyler Bate has in Florida, does a redacted person's superkick, just kidding, and crossface chicken wing. At the time, this was less controversial than it is now. Matt back rolls out of it just in time for Nick to hit a 450 splash.
That's lovely.
It is. So is the next part, actually. Buck's getting position for more bang for your buck, but Matt's back is too messed up to hold Paige in position. So he gets hit with Omega and Paige's version, which is Kenny doing You Can't Escape with Hangman in the pause in the middle doing a running shooting star press.
Oh, yeah. Which the camera barely catches.
Yeah, yeah. And then Paige finishes this whole sequence off with a top rope moonsault slam on Nick, which was so big, a lot of people thought it was the finish. So many people come out of their seats when Nick kicks out of this.
That's great.
This, I think, is the point where Paige and Omega are done playing around and having a nice wrestling match with their friends, and it's time to win this thing.
Yep.
Paige powerbombs Nick hard and rolls him back up so Kenny can slam a V-trigger into his spine, but Matt breaks the pin up. Giant AEW chant as Kenny tags in legally. Nick avoids the V-trigger, backflips out of a German suplex, but can't avoid a second V-trigger, and a third one sends Matt out to the ramp so Nick can take two Snapdragon suplexes and a Tiger Driver 98 for another near fall that the crowd bit on.
That Tiger Driver was brutal looking.
JR and Tony have been gently mocking Excalibur for calling the Tiger Driver 98 for a few weeks, with things like, oh, Tiger Driver 98 didn't get him, maybe a 99 will.
Well, 98 was a good year, not good enough, wasn't it, that JR quote?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Wow, way to bury an incredible year of wrestling.
Yeah, well, as we have previously discussed on this show, 1999 was not a good year for pro wrestling. Not in at the box office, for sure. In the ring, and creatively, not really. The whole place is chanting fight forever, apart from one guy looking at his phone just as the director cuts to him.
I did notice towards like the final third, the director really got obsessed with kind of cutting to the crowd and did not know when to do it, because missed three things.
I don't know when it kicked in, but I know that it was an edict from Turner. I don't know if it came from when they were on TNT or the move to TBS, but they wanted to see a lot of crowd. They wanted to see, like, show people having fun at these shows, right? That then spilled over into a general directorial thing and, like, appeared on all the pay-per-views. As somebody who has previously directed pro wrestling, it drives me up the friggin' wall. I don't want to watch... Right, we have a show in this country called Gogglebox, which is people reacting to TV. It is reacts videos before they became a thing on YouTube. It is massively popular. I don't want to watch someone else watching a show. I want to watch the show. Stop showing me people gawping at their phones and show me the damn near fall they're gawping at. Rant over.
During that string of Snapdragons, yes. And JR goes, bang! Or somebody, I don't know who says, somebody says bang, yells bang. When Kenny's doing these V-triggers, Snapdragons, it cuts away to my buddy, Sean, that was in the crowd. I was sitting right next to him. This big guy with a beard going like, you know, I know your listeners can't see what I'm doing, but yes, that's my buddy, Sean.
Sean actually got a mention later on in my notes. Tremendous.
Okay, cool.
Nick turns what is looking to be a super one-winged angel into the Avalanche Poison Rana, but runs straight into a Hangman Lariat. Page goes for another one over the ropes on Matt, who's standing on the ramp, but he ducks it, hauls him out there with two Northern Light suplexes. This first one makes a noise like a wardrobe falling down the stairs. He then checks behind him and moves back, so the third one means that Page will land on the plexiglass-covered LED screen part of the ramp instead. All of this looks very painful. Matt yells at Nick to get your ass up, and they spike Tombstone Hanger on the ramp with the Indie Taker. Again, massive boos. Another boo as Matt calls for the superkick party on Omega, and Nick is reluctant to join in, but Matt kind of bullies him into it. They also hit Kenny with the Golden Lovers finisher, the Golden Trigger, but Kenny kicks out at one, and the Wintrust Arena explodes. And this is where Sean gets his close up. I wrote, this time they cut to the one guy they cut to in the crowd has the perfect face on. It's a wonderful reaction.
I was screaming myself silly during when that kick out happened at one. I was like, it was like a high-pitched dry, like deep lung heave. And I almost passed out because I was screaming so hard.
Which is the one in Private Party that does the scream?
Oh, yeah. I know who you're talking about. Yeah, it was kind of like that. And I'm not proud, but what can I say? I was they got me. I was marking out.
Sometimes it just happens.
Yeah.
Yep.
Double super kick, but Omega is out at two. Now Matt is done playing around. Mm. As I said earlier, Kenny was in Pact Brutalizer for 3 minutes the preceding Wednesday, and Matt goes hell for leather on Omega's tape shoulder. Again, Nick calms him down, this time, unfortunately, into some NXT hand staring, and they set up for the Meltzer driver. Hangman, though, pops up out of nowhere, grabs Nick off the apron, and powerbombs him through a conveniently placed table that I don't know the context of because I didn't watch the rest of the show. Had that been placed there for something else, or was it just randomly there? Excalibur calls it the Timekeeper's Table, but they're sat a good 20 feet away in their usual spot.
On a much smaller table. It's
yes, yeah. This would have been really, like, they could have spread out a bit more.
It's like it got teleported in. It was an Ensign Chekhov's table.
Back on the inside, Matt gets sandwiched in the Buckshot V-Trigger combo, the move that won the titles and many other matches, but he manages to kick out. With one hand holding his damaged shoulder and the other arm useless, Kenny resorts to just headbutting him in the back while they're both on the ground.
I couldn't tell through the whole match. I was like, is Kenny actually hurt? It seemed like his shoulder was really bothering him.
Yeah. I mean, he had to take almost a year off recently, didn't he, to essentially be like rebuilt on the inside because he'd just been carrying so many injuries for so long. Omega gets Matt in the electric chair position for the one-winged angel and sweeps his leg off his shoulder so he can grab the head, but his damaged shoulder means he can't raise that arm high enough.
Yeah.
And in an underrated show of strength, he puts that leg back up and sweeps the other one off so he can use the other arm. But Matt slips out, super kicks him. Not enough people talk about Kenny Omega's strength.
He is incredibly strong.
One of the matches, I can't remember if it was the SCU or the Lucha Brothers match. There's one of those where his opponent is fighting the one-winged angel for some time on his shoulders. So he throws them off and catches them in the waist lock and does Kreutz Wrath instead. Like, his core must be insane. It's no wonder he had like four hernias or whatever it was he had to go and get sorted out.
Yeah, that guy is so strong.
Crowd lose their minds for Paige tagging in and hitting the one-winged angel instead. But Nick dives in to break the cover. Fire in his eyes, Hangman hurls Nick out to the ramp and hits the Buckshot Lariat, and then bang on the 30-minute call, comes back in with one on Matt and scores the pin to a gigantic standing ovation. And then quickly, to wrap up the story, after the match, Paige doesn't want to even look at the Bucks, and Omega has to be talked into a handshake as Paige watches on. Paige steps outside, the Bucks roll out, and as Hangman turns back to beckon Kenny to follow him up the ramp, he has his hands in Buckshot position on the top rope for just a second.
Oh, yeah.
And instead, he holds the ropes open and they leave arm in arm with a beer as Schiavone and Excalibur briefly speculate on what they may have seen. 3 years on and watching it on tape, Dan, does it like still hold up? Would you put this as a must-see match?
I think so.
Yeah?
I think it's
both
like
from a live perspective and from like a TV perspective?
I do, yeah. I mean, I feel very lucky that I was there. It was a completely sold-out show. The crowd was so happy to be there. It felt really special, you know, a new year. And absolutely, like kind of you mentioned that with the buildup of TV leading up to the show. Remember how rough like October and November was for AEW in like 2019?
Yeah, I was going to say like this is the point where they were doing very well at building up TV. This is their rebuilding period because the end of the 2019 ends with the Dark Order destroying everyone, which was shat on from all angles. And I think somebody inside the company went, all right, this isn't the direction we want to go in. And then they come back with January and February and the TV is so strong.
No, it was incredible. Mm. Some of the best of AEW programming ever.
Yeah.
And Revolution in a lot of ways felt a lot like AEW really coming into their own. Mm. And after some of those trials of the latter part of 2019. And it was just like, it was such a great atmosphere. People were just so excited, so happy to be there. And so live, of course, must. And then watching it back, it's really fun to see again because I remember these feelings that I had when they're doing things, but it is weird to see it from a different angle, you know. I'm so used to seeing it from like one in my mind, it's cemented as like you know. But of course, what else is new? It's such a great match.
Funny you should say that. That is kind of why, where possible, if I go to a show I know is being taped, I try and sit on the same side as the hard cam because I have like the TV view and with the way modern wrestling works, everybody works for the hard cam. So you get to see, you get the best. When I go to Corican Hall, for example, I always sit in the orange seats because that's the hard cam view.
Cool. Oh,
and everybody's working to that big side. Yeah, that's my tip.
It's also the cheapest side usually.
Yeah, that too. Mark, how about you? How do you feel about this?
This is a match that I had really fond memories for. So I am not someone, I've said this before, I'm not someone that can actually like watch TV wrestling week in, week out.
Yeah.
that's never really been a thing for me. I've always been a cherry picker for my wrestling. But this was probably the era of AEW where I paid the most attention, and 2020 is probably the year that I saw more AEW pay-per-views than any other year, like live or the day after. And yeah, this match 100% holds up how I remember it. It's like you said with the NXT looking at your hands, it's kind of melodrama and these kind of dramatic story elements in wrestling, especially within the last 5 years. It seems very easy for it to be overdone.
Yeah.
And very easy for it to be a little bit high school drama play or amateur dramatics. I think this is incredibly well done in this match because I don't think the Young Bucks are relatable to me. And so they kind of, they're a bit too abrasive for my liking. So having them in this position and having Hangman, who is one of the guys I really like from AEW, having him in this position, it makes the match work incredibly well. And I think all of the drama, I've said it earlier, the drama and the tension from this match comes from these little, like, irritations between friends, which you can get sometimes, and then it's just one thing and it all snowballs from there. And it's and the core of it is Matt Jackson letting his frustrations get the better of him, and it all snowballs from there. And I think it's done really well and quite naturally, and you've got a good match in there. Yes, the hot tags aren't, it's not like the textbook traditional
hot tag. I did call them hot tags because I didn't really know what else to call them, you know. The guy gets a tag and he gets to run wild for a bit. Like, hot tag was kind of like my shorthand for that.
But while it's not that, I think this is probably, this might be my favorite match from the tag match from this decade, especially in US.
Okay.
To sum it up, I think I would call this must see because I think it's an example of where tag team wrestling can be and is at this time frame. You know, this is what modern tag team wrestling can be.
So, not by much, but I think I'm about to be the low man on this match.
Oh, really?
Having not seen it in 3 years, it doesn't do for me what it did in the moment. Like, I look back and I found my tweets from this night, or rather the next morning when I was watching it, and, like, I was loving the hell out of this. I listened to another podcast do a contemporary review of it, and they are people who are usually quite low on the Bucks and go up and down on Kenny depending on what he's up to at that point, and they were going nuts for it. I found, so for every match for this, Mark and I tend to watch the matches twice. We will do what we call the fan watch, where we just let it wash over us and watch it as if it's the first time, and then the second time will be the notes watch. And when I do my notes watch, I can't write and watch at the same time, so I watch a bit, I pause, I write what happened, and doing that very often gives me time to form a thought and reflect on what I've just seen. This one I enjoyed much more on my notes watch than my fan watch.
Really?
Because I was processing the little details and remembering the little details and making sure I wrote them down.
And there's a lot of them.
There are, exactly, which is why I just talked for like 40 minutes straight. This doesn't do for me what it did in the moment, but I'll be damned if it's not still a hell of a tag match. Like, there are layers of story, both match specific and ongoing bigger picture stuff. The work is spectacular. It's creative. Apart from a couple of tiny instances and Matt Jackson very briefly looking the Reaper directly in the eye, the timing, execution, and ring positioning of all four in this is first rate. Like, everybody is exactly where they should be at exactly the right time. They don't screw... They barely screw anything up. But, yeah, it's all such, like, high-level stuff. I think if you had asked me on March the 1st, 2020... if I thought this was much see, I'd have said yes in a heartbeat. I think if the cutoff had been for nominations for this show had been 2020 or 2021 rather than 2022, I probably would have nominated this as Much C. As it stands today, I am going to add it to the subcategory that got unofficially nominated recently, which is very highly recommended. I do think this is excellent, excellent stuff. This is the one that Dave broke the scale for. One of the ones that Dave broke the scale for. This got 6 stars in the Observer. Nice. Currently sits at 9.68 on Cage Match. And it means in the space of 10 days, Kenny Omega had a 4.75-star match, a 4.75-star match, and a 6-star match.
Incredible.
And the two matches he had in the weeks prior on Dynamite were also very good.
Yeah.
This was Match of the Year in the Observer Awards. Revolution was Best Major Show. Bucks were Tag Team of the Year. Dynamite was Best Weekly TV Show. AEW was Best Promotion. Excalibur was Best Commentator. Tony Khan was Booker of the Year. And just to complete the set, the One Winged Angel was the move of 2020, according to the Wrestling Observer fans. Dan, is there anything we missed? Anything you wanted to get in? Anything from the live perspective?
I'm trying to think of it. Of anything. I feel bad. Was it the ladies match that went on right after?
Yeah. Oh, Chris- poor Nyla Rose and Chris Statlander. They had to go on immediately after this.
It was like you could hear a pin drop in there for 90% of the match.
The thing I forgot was that this was third on the card.
Yes. This is almost everything apart from Darby Allin versus Sammy Guevara, which was just a 5-minute sprint, and Dustin Rhodes versus Jake Hager, which was a bit of a mess, had to follow this. And I think, like, what you put on after this is Hager and Dustin going 5 minutes, or the Sammy and Darby sprint, because they will get over no matter what the crowd has just seen. Particularly Darby Allin, like, he is beloved, I think, in that company. He's made for life in that company. But poor Nyla and Chris had to follow this. And this was at the point before, I mean, like I said, Nyla had that great match with Riho on TV, but Statlander in particular wasn't as developed as she is now.
Yep.
And I do believe like that match wasn't great anyway, and they were put in an unwinnable position.
It wasn't that great. I wanted it to be so much better. They really struggled. I think also Chris Statlander may have been recovering from the flu at that point. Or maybe it was COVID. Who knows?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So this is only 2 or 3 weeks before... I mean, everything shuts down. Yep. And then they go to Daly's Place or QT Marshall's school for almost 18 months.
I remember when that shutdown happened, just thinking back very fondly on this match, being so thankful that I got to see it live. It was like the best way to go out. You know, I was like, well, gosh darn it. You know, if I was going to see one last show, it was Revolution 2020. I'm
glad it was this one.
You know, my one caveat to this being a must-see match is hindsight is 2020. So I'm trying to put myself in the context of, you know, a moment in time. That being said, if I am going to complain about anything, it is the reunification of the Elite. You know, I think we were really solidifying the storyline of the Elite breaking up with this match and kind of the build up with, you know, the Jobber and ROH comments and stuff, like really going into, like really, you know, pushing that narrative. And when they do get back together and Hangman is reunited and they do, like, they don't even do like a segment the next week of them celebrating that the Elite are back, I was so mad. So angry. And I was like, you can't have such an incredible match like this one.
Yeah.
And not and their reunification, I just can't help it. I now when I look back on that match, I'm like, but when they actually got back together, it was just not that big of a deal, which just makes me crazy. I know that's so, it's not fair to judge the match on that merits, but I just have to put it out there because it's something, it's like an itch in the middle of my back that I can't scratch.
If we're doing nitpicks, I'm going to have one tiny, tiny one. In the context of Hangman's story, Kenny should have got the pin.
Sure.
So that Hangman has even more doubt. Yes, he won the match, but he didn't win the match. The more Hangman doubts himself, the better that character is, I think.
Other than that, you know, I don't have much to add. It was just so That kick out at one, I think the loudest the crowd got that whole night. I mean, that was really special. And also, I remember being so excited when Hangman does the one-winged angel. Everybody was like, what's happening? I think the crowd was also convinced that Kenny was going to be upset that the Hangman did that move, but it didn't play into the story at all at the end.
So, if that is a wrap on the Bucks versus Hangman Page and Kenny Omega, I would like to thank you, Dan, for joining us today. It has been tremendous fun having you on. The floor is now yours, too. Tell people where you could be found, if you want to be found on the internet, all the stuff you've got going on, all that kind of thing. I will wave my copy of Transformers Issue 2 at the camera to prove I'm an actual fan. please, go ahead.
Yeah, well, you know, if you just like Google my name, Daniel Warren Johnson, you will find my stuff. I do have a live stream show that I do every Friday. It's called Friday with D-Dubs, and we just hang out and draw. And I don't shill my YouTube channel that much. You know, I've promised people I'll never say the words, please subscribe.
It's like we don't ask how we don't ask for iTunes reviews.
It's all about just the hangout, and I just kind of draw and whatever I'm working on. So that's something I like to tell people that people don't necessarily know about, but most of it is just if you see my books, maybe consider picking one up. If you know, we obviously have a wrestling fan base here. I did do a wrestling comic. I wrote and drew it. It is a one and done series. It's all in like one book. It's called Do a Powerbomb. It's available at like bookstores and comic book stores and Amazon. Please check it out if you're so inclined. I think it's worth your time and money. You should definitely look at it.
It comes highly recommended by this podcast. Frequent contributor Eamon Bell kind of like put us onto it. Mark and I have both read it. I love it to bits.
Legitimately the last book that I was getting from my local comic book store on a monthly basis when they shut down. I think Daniel's style in comics it stands out from so many different people. Daniel is so good at having sort of energy, a sense of movement, dynamic elements. I think your work with, because you've got Mike Spicer as a regular colorist and you work so well together, he does a great job. As someone that did comics reviews for a couple of years, I've kind of learned always shout out to the team as a whole, because sadly too many people focus just on the writer. I know.
How many angry letters did you get in your DMs?
I got no angry letters because I don't know how many people actually read my reviews, but I got one quote on the cover. That's it. I'll take that.
Excellent.
But no, I'll say Do a Powerbomb. Highly recommended if you're a big fan of comics. Going a bit further back, Extremity was a really great series.
Thank you.
And I think the thing that comes through to me with Daniel's work is I get a sense of how much you love so many different things, and a lot of your comics feel like trying to imbue your passion for that. I haven't read Murder Falcon, but I'm pretty sure that comes through in that. Do a Powerbomb, you can really sense the love for wrestling. Transformers, I can just tell that you love that back in the day. You love the toys, you love the comics. It just feels like, I say this as someone that's probably read at least one comic from every single comic run that Transformers has ever done.
Sure.
To the extent I can remember buying the Generation 2 comic back in the mid-90s.
Oh, you were the one.
Yeah, I was that one person still buying it.
Generation 2, good series.
We have to be careful here, Mark, or every guest will want this treatment.
if you like comics and you've not got something from Daniel Warren Johnson, it's well worth going out and just trying something. I'll leave it at
that. Nobody else has made Optimus Prime German Suplex Starscream. All right,
that's
wrestling fans.
That's the damn truth.
Yeah.
That's what you've got to go and buy. Right, I am now going to plug us. You can go to linktr.com patreon.com/mustseematches for all the ways to subscribe, links to the full list of nominations and much more. We are at mustseematches on Twitter, Instagram, Threads and Blue Sky. And we also have a Discord, bit.ly/mustseematches Discord, where you can come and have a chat. I am at Kieran Edits on Twitter and Mark is
at monkey_buckles.
I also have another show, Nothing and Like It, chronicles the UK's Frontier Wrestling Alliance's adventures on television. You can find everything to do with that at linktr.ee/fwapod. Next week, the long-awaited return of Sarah Parkin, which means the long-awaited return of some classic Joshi Pro Wrestling. Akira Hokuto versus Shinobu Kandori from All Japan Women's Dream Slam 1 on April the 2nd, 1993. Thank you very much for listening. Hope everybody has a happy new year and join us in 2024 for that. Bye.